Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Like a March Madness style bracket since that South Carolina loss. And
they've
been walking the razor's edge, and any loss after that would have kicked them out. And they've done a good job so far. And, you know, they got another game to prove themselves on Saturday. So we'll see what happens.
I'm excited about it, but this is a monster the Dogs are going up against on Saturday.
That'll lead us right into the 5 at 5, brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. The first question I'm going to ask you regards the SEC championship game, because the conversation this week has been about DeAndre Swift's health, and we assume he's going to play on Saturday. He is a little bit dinged up, we know that. So a dinged up DeAndre Swift versus a healthy Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who has the better game on Saturday? Now, these two are very similar in statistics. They both average right around 100 yards rushing a game. Now, Georgia has the number 2 rushing defense in the nation, only giving up 71 yards per game. LSU has the 28th, giving up about 125.
They've given up more yards.
Yes, but again, you have to factor in Swift's a little bit dinged up. He maybe get a few less carries because of that. But again, you're trying to get in the playoffs. You're going to go out there if you can go out there. So who do you think has the better game Saturday?
Well, it depends on how the game goes.
Mm-hmm.
If Georgia gets the lead and plays with the lead, then Swift, provided he's healthy.
Yes.
If the Dogs fall behind and have to throw more than they want to, then it'll be it won't be Swift. I mean, that's
right.
I guess I'm not really making a prediction there. I'm just kind of saying how it's going to play out.
Well,
so I'm hoping it will be Swift and Georgia will play with the lead.
Right.
It would really behoove Georgia to play with the lead. I mean, any school, but especially the kind of offense Georgia wants to play.
Right. And I guess just given all the attention that Joe Burrow's been getting and how dynamic the offense has been, throwing the deep ball and everything, everybody's kind of passed over Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but he's leading the SEC in rushing. No, he's second in the SEC rushing, only behind Lynn Bowden. That's the only other rusher that Georgia's seen that has more yards than him coming into this game. And for as many yards as Joe Burrow's thrown for, I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire has really contributed to this offense as well, but somehow he still managed to fly under the radar.
Yeah, it's like when all these good teams that used to run, we would call it the chuck and duck, you know, call it the run and shoot.
Yeah.
And these quarterbacks were throwing for 3,000-4,000 yards when that wasn't the norm back then. They'd always have a 1,000-yard rusher.
Yeah.
And it was because teams were so set defensively to try to stop the pass, you hand the ball off, and suddenly these guys are getting 8, 9, 10-yard chunks.
Right, especially later in the game when the defense is just absolutely gassed from trying to defend that deep ball. All right, we'll run between the tackles and get us, you know, 80 yards and a couple touchdowns. Let's seal this thing.
And when those – I'm telling you this, when those offenses were good, like when you had, like, Andre Ware and David Klingler and those guys at, like, Houston back in the day, when those offenses were good, it almost – like, if you held a – if they ran the ball and you held them to 6 or 7 yards, you almost felt like you'd won a play.
Right, right.
You're still getting gashed for 6 or 7 yards.
Right.
So that's kind of like – and Kirby couldn't say enough good things about Helaire the other day.
He went on and on and on about him. I forget the exact phrase that he used.
He said he was a baller.
Baller,
and
like
then he went on
a bona fide football player or something to that effect. Like,
I mean, I've never really noticed him say that kind of thing about somebody before.
Well, and, you know, we kind of know Kirby is a very coach-speak type of coach, and we get the usual things. Well, I got a lot of respect for this team. They got a lot of talented guys. They work hard, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, even talk about someone like Joe Burrow, like, he can make all the throws, he's dynamic, but, you know, he talked about Edwards-Helaire, like, this guy's a bona fide football player.
Oh, it was.
That means, you know, that they've dedicated extra time to him in film review and the kind of schemes they're going to be up against on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm digging up the quote here from Monday, but it definitely got my attention just on the way he spoke of him. You just don't – I mean, he's always, like you said, he always – has a lot of respect for the other team, but when he started talking about the running back, it was very, very interesting.
And we know how detail-oriented Kirby is, and obviously being a defensive-minded coach, you tend to be that way, and the entire nation has been talking about what Joe Burrow can do with his arm, and, you know, he's going to go down as one of the greatest single-season quarterbacks college football's ever seen, and he's definitely going to get the Heisman in a week and a half. But, you know, Kirby's looking where everybody else isn't, and that's at the running back and how much of a factor he's going to be on Saturday.
All right, here's the quote, Tyler. Right, Baller. I mean, he is a football-playing machine. When they cut out a running back and say this is going to be a running back, this guy is his explosive quickness. He makes the best football tacklers in our conference miss. So when you got football players that are playing against him from Auburn, Florida, Alabama, and he's making them miss, you get immediate respect with the toughness that he runs with. He says he has incredible drive and ability and willingness to break tackles and toughness that I just respect. He plays the game the way it should be played, and they play him an awful lot because he's really good.
Some high praise right there.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
And up until this season when they did this dramatic overhaul of the LSU offense, that's what their identity was for so many years, was having the Leonard Fournettes, the Darius Geises, you know, the list goes on and on.
Oh,
just
these
really powerful, fast running backs that, you know, they're just handing the ball off to and throwing when they needed to, going all the way back to last year. I mean, Joe Burrow had a good season last year, but he wasn't the heart and soul of this offense. It was based off their running game. And now that they've done this 180 shift and gone mainly to passing, that hasn't hurt their running game at all. Again, it's just kind of flying under the radar more than anything else.
You know what's funny, too, as far as leading rushers at LSU, their career leading rusher goes all the way back 21 years in Kevin Faulk. And then number two is Dalton Hilliard in 85. Charles Alexander
guys?
In 78. Oh, yeah, back then, okay. Yeah. But, and look, I know Herschel goes back to 82, so
yes,
Georgia's all-time leading rusher is now, what, been in the books for 37 years.
Yes.
But the Dogs also have, what, number two and number three that played in this century.
Very recently.
Yes, and Nick Chubb and Todd Gurley, not just this century, but this decade. But LSU's top three rushers are 98, 85, and 78, which is weird, but they've had some great running backs over the years.
Well, and I think a lot of, you know, just the past couple of years, because, again, so much of their offense was built around running the football, I think a lot of those guys were just using it as a vessel to get the NFL. I mean, I remember when Leonard Fournette committed to LSU, he said, I'm basically going there for the next 3 years. Like, that was his plan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he did. And, you know, he hasn't necessarily worked out greatly in the NFL, but he's there, you know, regardless. The Darius guys is the same way. You know, it's just kind of how, you know, we pride Georgia on being running back. You, LSU's not really
Look,
that far behind.
There's a lot of similarities between Georgia and LSU.
Yes.
Lots of similarities. It's funny, too, because these are two schools that love their football.
Yes.
They like basketball, but it ain't the make or break.
It's not the
same. When the basketball's got a little something going, both teams will get behind them. And then, of course, LSU is just – obviously one of the all-time greats in baseball, gigantic baseball. Georgia's got, you know, a decent history in baseball.
We keep
but
up.
But not like what LSU has.
Right.
Even though Georgia was the first SEC team to win a national championship in baseball, it wasn't LSU. But basically, I mean, these schools are
very similar
in that, in how that goes.
Yeah, it's going to be a great game on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Moving on, the 5-5 here, now that the regular season has come to an end, of course, we still got conference championships to go this Saturday, but we know who all the bowl-eligible teams are for the 2019 season. Is there one team that really jumps out at you as a, wow, I can't believe they made a bowl game?
God, I hadn't thought about that. Now, I thought I read where there might be some 5-7s getting in.
And they have to go to the 5-7 route based on
But I don't think they have enough 6-6s to get
What's that metric they use to determine which 5-7s get
in?
Is
it the APR?
Yeah, I think it's the APR.
Yeah, to decide which 5-7 schools
will get in. Exclude 5-7 schools. We'll go with teams with bowl-eligible records. How about that?
Well, let's just talk about the SEC.
Yes,
I can't sit here and say every 5-5 or 6-16.
That's where mine was coming from anyway, because I was going to say Tennessee, especially given how they started the season. We thought that Pruitt may not even make it to the end of the year.
And not just 6-6, but they ended up winning 7 games.
Yes, they did, 7-5.
So I think, after they lost to Georgia State, I think you're right. The fact that they ended up winning 7 games is certainly – that's one of the, I guess, if you want to call it success stories of the year. I think they definitely fall into that. There's no doubt that's who it is to me from the SEC.
Well, not just losing those two games. They started off the season 1-4, and then lost to Alabama after winning against Mississippi State. And
the Bama loss was their only one
they've won since then. And I expected them to be, because I'm looking down at my schedule here that I made before the season. I had them with
helmet schedule.
Yeah, I had them with four losses on the season to Florida, us, Bama, and then Missouri at the end of the season. And, you know, they're pretty close to that. I obviously didn't expect.
You didn't have them losing to Georgia State.
I did not. Now, I was not complaining when that did happen. I went to Georgia State myself for a couple years.
There
so I'm tied in there a little bit. And, of course, the craziness of the BYU game the next week. But, you know, Tennessee is a team that they're making steps in the right direction. And again, there's a lot of questions when Pruitt got the job. He's like, can he handle being a head coach? Can he communicate with these players well enough? Can he, you know, just handle the responsibilities that head coach has to take on? And, you know, that first year was so-so, and this year started off really bad, but they seem to have finally found a little bit of footing.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, let's see how it plays out next year. But, yeah, I think that's certainly at least the answer. I was trying to go through these bowl games, these bowl projections. I'm not necessarily seeing any 5-7s, but I am seeing a bunch of 6-6s. So maybe they will be able to fill them all. I'm not sure. I have to go look. But I thought I saw a headline where there were going to be a couple of teams that may not necessarily have the required number of wins.
Well, I can tell you, we already have one bowl that's confirmed, and that's the Makers Wanted Bahamas Bowl between Charlotte and Buffalo, which is the first bowl of the bowl season on Friday the 20th.
Yes, and Will Healy, the head coach at Charlotte, was the head coach at Austin Peay.
Oh, okay.
Last year.
Yeah, and that's
so this is his first year in Charlotte.
That's Charlotte's first bowl game in program history. Obviously, they're still a very relatively young team as far as FBS goes, but that's good for them.
Yeah, no, he's a name that, you know, if he continues his upward progression, this is a guy whose name's going to be on a lot of these lists, too.
So he's somebody that's been dogged.
Was that a full 50 minutes? Or no, was that the game?
That was the game where they had the running clock.
Okay. Was it a running clock or did they go 10 minutes?
I think they went 10 minutes.
I don't think they can do a running clock.
Okay, I think it was 10 minutes
because
it was so dang hot that day.
It was brutal.
Guys were getting cramps. They're like, look, we're winning by a lot. Let's get this thing over with. And I
completely
agreed
with
that.
Both sides were good
with that. Yeah, because it was just one of those brutal, brutal days.
But that's a great job that he did at Charlotte this year.
And again, when you're talking about guys that are going to be those potential head coaches for some of these mid-majors in the next couple of years, that's definitely a guy to keep your eye on, you know,
The
fact that he can turn around a program that quickly.
Young guy. They won their last five games, and they ended up going 7-5, so they were 2-5.
Mm-hmm.
And they beat North Texas, Middle Tennessee, UTEP, Marshall, and Old Dominion. So good for them to get bowl eligible and go to their first ever bowl game.
That's right.
So 2013 was their first year playing on the FBS level.
Okay.
They were FCS before that, I believe.
And wasn't their program relatively young in FCS too?
Yeah, I think so. Their first head coach was the only head coach they had was a guy named Brad Lambert, who was an assistant under Coach Donnan back in the 90s. And Brad took over the program, and it's hard to start a program.
Sure.
And they won five games a couple of times, and even last year they went 5-7. So it wasn't like Will Healy was taking over a 0-12 or a 1-11. I mean, they did win five games last year, almost got bowl eligible, but this year he got them over the hump.
Right.
But he was hired in 2011.
Okay.
Their first recruiting class was 2012. And they announced they would begin play in Conference USA in 2015. So they were FCS in 2013 and 2014.
Right.
And then joined Conference USA in 2015.
That's kind of similar to what Georgia State did. They started the program in 2010, and by, I think, 13, they were already an FBS independent at that point.
And they're going to be going to, what, their third bowl game?
Yes, they are. So I think it's either going to be the Cure Bowl down in Orlando, which they've been to.
That's the one they've been to twice.
Yes, or the, I think it's the Camellia Bowl out in Montgomery, Alabama. One of those two, which is, you know, hey, that's relatively close and easy travel. You know, they had a pretty good team this year. I think they're definitely, you know, heading in the right direction.
Yeah, the Cure Bowl is on December 21st. Now, is that? That's on a Saturday?
Yeah, that's Saturday. So the bowl season starts on a Friday this year, which is interesting.
So the Bahamas Bowl and the Frisco Bowl are both on Friday.
That is the Tropical Smoothie Cafe Frisco Bowl, by the way.
Yes, I want to make sure I get the sponsor mentions.
I love bowl names.
I do, too.
They're always great.
They're great, man.
We got the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl this year, in case you didn't know about that one.
I did know that, yes. and it's going to be great. Yeah, exactly.
Watch it be a horrible game.
Yeah. Let's see. I was going to say, I'm going to project who's going to be in the Sun Bowl. Or excuse me, the Tony the Tiger
Bowl.
Wake Forest and Cal is the one I'm looking at.
Okay. That could be an interesting game. Wake Forest has had a pretty decent season. They definitely fell off towards the end.
Right.
They start off on a pretty hot streak.
Won 8 games.
Yeah.
Or not. Did they win 9? Either 8 or 9.
My schedule is in front of me.
They went, I don't know what they did. It was either 8 or 9. But they definitely ended up with more wins than I think anybody thought. Plus, they're, I don't know if it's necessarily the tougher side. They went 8-4.
Yeah.
They lost 3 of their last 4.
Yeah.
But one of those was to Clemson.
Yeah, we kind of saw that one coming.
The one this past weekend was that weird
ending it was in
where you could lose an overtime game by more than 7 or 8.
That's right, yes. I remember seeing the highlight of that now.
So it was a field goal, like Syracuse kicked a field goal to go up 33-30. Wade gets the ball, and a pick six makes it. He didn't have to run it out.
Right, he wanted those points.
39-30. So there's actually an overtime. And I meant to look this up, and I forgot about it. Has the overtime started in, with Georgia and Auburn? That was the first year that there weren't ties in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been an overtime game that was decided as more than a one possession game, like in this one, a nine point win?
And the max you could win by, I guess, would technically be, if you got past the third overtime into the 2 point thing, you could technically win by 14 by getting a pick six if you were already up by 8 and getting a touchdown.
So
I guess that's the max you could win by.
The max you could win in overtime would be 14.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. But has there been
I
know there have been 8 point wins.
Right. I don't know. Maybe we'll have to look that one up and see if.
But has there ever
we
been
made
a,
some history
9 or more?
And Syracuse was a team for me that was pretty disappointing this year,
especially
considering how well they've done the past couple seasons. I really thought they were at least going to stay pretty consistent, but they just had a really rough year.
The expectations for them were pretty high after winning 10 games last year, but this year they didn't even get to bowl eligibility.
Right. Well, hey, they won their final game with a 9-point overtime victory, so that's worth something. Up in the Carrier Dome.
Bizarre, yes.
The place that doesn't have air conditioning, from what I understand.
I think it does now.
It does now.
I don't know. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know.
I just know that was the funny thing. They're sponsored by an AC company, and they don't have AC in there, which, again, you're in New York. You don't really necessarily need it for most of the year.
No, not where they are. But when you do need it, it's certainly nice to have.
Oh, I'm sure. All right, that's the 5 at 5, brought to you, as always, by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.